Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. I hear this echo. Do you hear echo?
Yes.
Shoot, there's not, I hate that. I hope it goes away. There's not two of me.
Now it seems to have gone away.
I think so. Okay, good. It's just a technical glitch, I think, in the system or something. One of me is fine. Only two or three. today's September 26, 2019. Yesterday was my birthday. I turned 29.
Oh, nice.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. I'll just stay 29, I think. and easier that way. But people say, you know, as you get older, they say, whatever age you are, you don't look it. That's their compliment. So today we're going to talk about pressures of traveling and the horrors and good parts about, traveling, the athlete traveling to important competitions. And maybe you have stories yourself as well we can share. As an athlete or as a, I know Matt, you talked about getting to that race in San Francisco and then getting directed off course and all kinds of things can happen. We could all write a book about the stuff that happens traveling, but help your athletes to anticipate, control the things they can control and anticipate those and be able to let go of the things they can't control. And then when you are, if you have to be traveling with your athlete there to the event, you know, to be able to help yourself to travel well and you can work in different capacities there with your athlete. We can talk about that too. So talk about today what kind of stresses your athletes or performers, it could be a musician or business person as well, have when they're competing or traveling away from home. It could be, you know, if you're working with business people, it could be a business executive going to give a talk, a keynote speech somewhere else, that kind of thing too, that you could work with. And then, just talk about pressure of away events and the, I have one right now that's, athlete is traveling to Australia, so I thought of that for this, as one story for this call. And the self-doubts that can creep in when you don't have your normal support systems from home. Some athletes are traveling, you know, travel with their coaches or their team, their entourage, if they're, you know, a well-known athlete, a well-established, other athletes might travel alone. And so, you have to build an account for that, figure out everything yourself if you're traveling alone, and support yourself. Let's talk about how to build inner confidence with even within unfamiliar territory there, handling different countries, you know, environments. There might be a different language spoken, different cultures, customs, doing things the wrong, you know, if some languages, you know, you're saying no when, it signaling might mean yes. It's important to know basics, like how to say yes and how to say no in a different country so you're not signaling with the wrong thing. Knowing how to say, where's the bathroom? It's important sorts of questions. Doing interviews. Some athletes, you know, may be doing, I know the athlete I'm working with that's going to Australia will be doing media interviews beforehand at his event, about his performance. So that can be stressful also, doing the media interview beforehand. If the media, sometimes they're friendly, sometimes they don't ask questions that aren't so friendly. What about your competition? What do you think of so-and-so beating you? Or he beat you at the last game. You think he's going to beat you at this game? That kind of thing. How to handle those kinds of things. And then there's, you know, the big jet lag issue with sleep. And if you're traveling to Australia or some Europe, a place far away, or if you're in Europe, we have some, you know, people on this call that are in Europe and they might be traveling, yeah, to the U.S., how to be able to handle those jet lag issues so that you can perform well. It, you know, athletes have additional, everybody has to deal with jet lag, but then athletes have special issues with that. It can affect, you know, that physical performance, as well as it can affect mental confusion and difficulty making decisions when you haven't had enough sleep. So, yeah, getting ready for the competition, how to recover as quickly as you can from challenges from a long distance, and then how to charge with an athlete if he asks you to travel with him. Yeah, did someone else just join us?
Hi, this is Evan.
Oh, hi, Evan. Thanks for joining us. Yeah. So, yeah, just introducing our topic here of traveling athletes and working with them. I know, yeah, Evan, you've traveled to France a lot, worked with athletes there too. And so, you know, talking about traveling issues, both for the athlete who's traveling to the competition and then also yourself, as if you are traveling to work with an athlete, traveling with them, how you can have your best performance as a performing edge coach or sports psychology coach working with people, and be at your best too, and help the athlete to perform their best. So, yeah, first I'll just check in with you and see, do you have questions you'd like me to answer on this topic or other things? And then, you know, get into the topic here and we can go over things that you want to address also. Anyone can jump in.
Hi, Dr. Joanne. It's
yeah.
Michelle.
Yeah.
I don't know if you received my question last night. I sent it a bit late.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't get it by email.
That's okay. It's not totally related to what we're talking about. Can I ask it anyway?
Oh, sure. Go ahead. Yeah, you always get that question.
The volleyball team I'm working with at the university, it's a women's varsity team. And what they're experiencing is they'll be up in the score, they'll have a lead, and they let it go. It's sort of like the common occurrence on this team where they can't sustain that lead. They just, you know, they back off on the pressure and the intensity for whatever reason, and then they often get beaten at the end, or the other team will get really, really close and it'll wake them up and then they'll kick into gear again and win the game, but they're causing themselves a lot of stress over this. So I was just curious, do you have any tips onto like what they can do in that moment to just maintain that intensity of play and to maintain the lead?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yeah, just make sure everyone heard the question. Yeah, when Michelle's volleyball team with the varsity, it can be up on the score and then they back off on their intensity and then can be down on the score. Yeah, and there's a little bit of background noise. Let me, if you press *6 on your phone, that'll help. Oh, thank you. And then if you want to speak again, just press *6 to unmute. Tips that you can do let's see, I would say that, you know, to be able to maintain the intensity, yeah, to have that feeling of they are, you know, if you're up on the score, yeah, you know, volleyball teams like to give the team members a high five, and that's always good to say, hey, good shot, we're ahead, or we did well on that one. It's good to celebrate, but then not to continue to celebrate and say, yeah, we got it now, and not relax too much. To have that feeling of that other team's coming back, they can get us at any moment. To be able to work with the team ahead of time, imagine that scenario. Imagine all the different scenarios they could go through, and you know, like the other team, yeah, getting extra point. or are you getting a point ahead of them? But then, you know, kind of like empathy with, you know, gaining, helping the team to, when you have empathy, you sort of have the, you get into the other person's head and know what are they going through. And so you can imagine the other team now is like really hungry for coming back and is, you know, wanting to get you. So if you can have them imagine that, that the other team is hungry to get that next point, then that could perhaps help them to keep up their intensity. And have them, you know, just imagine that they're they need to keep, now that they're ahead, they are the, it's kind of like they're the hunted rather than the hunter, rather than chasing the other team, they're being chased. And so there's a kind of responsibility there of everybody's on them, and it's harder, sometimes it's easier to be the underdog, you know, being under the score and then coming back and chasing the other team. But when you're on top, yeah, you tend to either be, get too lax and relaxed, or feel too much pressure. So yeah, it's kind of like a, yeah, you're like a gas pedal, I guess. Thinking of it like you want to give yourself just an press on the gas pedal a little bit, give yourself just enough pressure to feel like they are coming to they are chasing me, kind of thing. And that can really help to, I think, keep the pressure on. And, you know, an example of that with another sport with myself was running. I was usually I'm the hunter chasing these other women in this group that I run with in races. I'm sometimes behind, and I'm chasing them, and I'm used to that position. But a recent race I was in, I actually passed these other women early on in the race, and then I thought, well, what am I doing up here? Or do I belong here? Wow, I'm ahead of them. This is exciting. And so I kept thinking, you know, they're right behind me. I know they're right behind me. I didn't know where they were, but I kept saying that to myself. They're right behind me. They're coming to get me. They're ready to pass me. And that helped me to keep the gas pedal on, to keep the pressure on myself to keep running faster. And each time we turned a corner, I would glance back just a tiny bit to see, and sure enough, they were right there. But even the nice thing about our visualization, our imagination, is that we can imagine our opponent in any way that we want. So you can imagine that they're right behind us there, and we got to keep the at play even better, kind of thing. So that's a good, that's a great situation, Michelle, where you you have to keep, kind of keep that pressure on and say, you know, it's not over till it's over, and not celebrate. Yeah, celebrating too soon is one of the biggest mistakes that athletes make, to celebrate before the game is over. And I know there's, I'm thinking of the Olympics, that classic case, I forget the woman's name, you may know, Michelle, with are you guys, where she, Lindsay or something, I forget, she was snowboarding, and then she was, you know, right at the end of the Olympic event, she was right in front, and she did this little trick, she came down snowboarding, it was on that snowboard cross where they all you remember that?
Yeah, I totally remember it.
Yeah, she put up her,
she was an American, I think, wasn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, and put her feet up in the air, and was celebrating, doing a trick right at the end, and then came down and tripped and went off the course and lost the gold medal.
Oh.
And then then someone else passed her, and she had to kind of like just, you know, put her hands in and pump herself to the end.
yeah.
You remember that?
Brutal.
Yeah, I don't know if you're, that was a while back, if your athletes might be too young to remember that, but it would be great to tell them that story or show them that video. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. Of how it's when you celebrate too soon, it's not you end up can end up losing the gold medal and everybody remembers that the looking stupid part. So sometimes it's you got the carrot in front, you want to look good, but also we a stronger motivation for a team or for individuals is to not look stupid, right? not embarrass ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so hopefully that helps a little bit.
Very helpful. Thank you, Dr. Joanne.
Yeah, okay, great. So let me just go into...
This is Evan.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, if I may add something real quick.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, what came to me was also just staying focused on the task at hand, like staying focused on the process rather than the outcome. I think that's an easy and simple, not so much easy because you've got to work on that, but simple way to avoid having all these thoughts like, oh, I'm ahead. just focusing on, serving, receiving, passing, I think it's a great way to avoid all these stories because when you start feeling like you're ahead and you may think like, okay, this is already won, and then you say, okay, I shouldn't, tell myself that, I need to refocus, what if they come back, then all these thoughts are just disturbing, and trying to stay focused and just serving, passing, receiving can help with that a lot, I think.
Thanks, Evan.
That's true, Evan, yeah. Yeah, that's true, that's really true. So different athletes are motivated by different things. And yeah, you're right, Evan. Sometimes if you focus on the other team too much, then they're, you give them too much power and they can come back. But just thinking, if you make a mistake, just doing something to get rid of that that feeling inside. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I had examples in mind. Just for me, I was playing tennis table with some friends this summer. I hadn't played for 15 years, and we were doing a tournament. And I was in
table
semifinal.
Table
tennis or ping pong.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was leading 15-10. I was leading by 5 points, and I started to feel the same or think like, okay, I should win, right? This is cool. I'm gonna be in final, and then I started to lose a point, the second one, and then I started to fall onto the other extreme. Oh my gosh, he's coming back. Oh, what a shame. I'm going to be beaten. And of course, he came back and he beat me. And I was like, I was just, in the yard, just fun game. But I was like, man, that relates so much to what you're going through when you're competing. And I remember the soccer team, the Paris Saint-Germain, when they were leading. They were led 3-1 on the second leg, so they were, because they had won 4-0 in the first leg in the Champions League, 3-1, losing 3-1 was okay. They could lose 5-1, right? And to be eliminated, they had to lose 6-1. And that happened. They were led 3-1 at 88 minutes, 2 minutes before the end of the game. And the other team, the Barcelona, scored like 3 times in 7 minutes, with the overtime. And just because they started to fear the comeback, I think you switch from a state of mind where you're maybe overconfident, and before the other people come back, when you start the comeback happening, then you can feel into being like the fear of it, and then you start to focus on the fear, the mistakes, and playing small and all that kind of thing. And that was kind of a crazy comeback that they made, and that happened. So, yeah, I think for me, just trying to stay away from these thoughts, whether it's being overconfident or fearing the comeback, it's just, what's important now well, the pass, the lead, the strategy, all that kind of stuff. And I found that really helpful.
Yeah, exactly. That's great, Evan. And, yeah, with your table tennis example. Yeah, it's good to learn these lessons in a backyard in a non-important competition first.
Yeah.
As opposed to when it really, yeah, when the gold medal's on the line. It gives the point of the basics coming back to stay, you know, when you're not feeling so confident or you're worried. Rather than doing a special trick like that the snowboarder did at the end, you know, just stay with the basics, what the fundamentals, what always works for me, and stay with what you know rather than trying to do something special. Yeah, so that's great, yeah. So did you, Matt, are you there? Did you want to add anything, or did you have any questions or comments too?
No, I like what Evan was saying, and I like to stay in the now, focus now. That's a common one. But one thing that I talk about in particular, Michelle, with the volleyball kids and basketball, more of the court sport, field sport kind of things, is for instance, my top players, when they are feeling their best, they're putting that purposeful practice into their play. So we're constantly just talking about how if they get their feet, you know, all good athleticism, you got to get your feet under you, under your center of mass. So they get their feet under them, and they focus just on where they're placing their feet. In other words, they're going back to that automatic push the ground away, feel the ground underneath you, so that more sort of external factor there. So they get their feet under them, and they're ready to compete. And we want to see, you know, competition, not a threat. So we want to say, got my feet, time to compete, or something along those lines. And so we just kind of constantly say that when we're training. We constantly revisit that sort of cue, is get your feet under your center mass, so feet and compete. And we're always just kind of saying it to keep it simple, but they know what that means. So feet, compete, you know. So and we play off of that sometimes, like, you know, you get your feet, you're not going to be defeated, right? Like those little things there. But so feet and compete, you know, so feet to compete, you know, just those. So it sounds so simple, but I don't know, it seems to work pretty well, just that little cue. But I think it also helps that we're using that kind of verbiage in practice. And when somebody's a little bit off in their serve or they're late to the ball, it always comes down to their feet. So that tends to help a little bit, especially with court sports. I don't know. That's just my thought. It might not be translatable, but that's what we use.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. That's great. Yeah. So that's good. If you want to put your phone on mute, that sounds great. So we can
thank you, Matt.
Clear recording. Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks. I just wanted to talk about kind of transition into, you guys all have such great comments and great information. I wanted to talk about, this pressures of traveling and getting into, when you're competing as an athlete. I just, you know, we probably all have stories of mistakes we've made, and you learn so much from mistakes. I remember as an athlete, a top athlete myself, in the early 80s, I was getting invited to travel all over the world with triathlons after I got second in the Hawaii Ironman triathlon, and I was invited to the Bahamas, back when we had a Bahamas, oh my gosh, before the hurricane, and so they paid for my travel, but I had to pay for the extras for the bicycle, all the extra fees for that kind of thing. When you're a triathlete and many sports, you have equipment to deal with. You know, I've worked with pole vaulters. They've got to get their pole vaults safely there on the plane and deal with this oversized piece of baggage. And with bicycles, of course, they're very delicate, and they can, you know, the spokes can be, they could totally ruin a bicycle in the baggage area. So, and back in the 80s, they didn't have really good cases for the bicycles. Back then, I couldn't even afford a nice case for them, and there weren't that many. There were bicycle boxes, and so I put mine in a bicycle box, and you hope and pray, you get it on the plane, and sure enough, it got sent to the wrong place. I got to the Bahamas, but my bicycle was not there. So I couldn't bike to practice the course for 2 days. Bicycle got there just in the nick of time, right before the race. So that creates a lot of stress. So now there are much better, boxes. Bicycle cases. You can put your case in, and there are actually services where you can have the bike sent there ahead of time for the race. A lot of bicyclists and triathletes have two bikes. They can be training on their other bike at home and send their racing bike there and to make sure it gets there okay. So that's one suggestion to, you know, deal with whatever an athlete has to do to deal with equipment, to if there's services that help you get your equipment there properly, or, you know, buy insurance for your travel and for your equipment. That's really helpful. Another situation I remember as an athlete was I was invited to the Nice, France triathlon. This was many years ago in the early 80s when I was younger and didn't have the experience with this. And a friend was driving me to the airport, and he said, "Oh, can I see your passport? Let me just check your passport." And as we're driving and this is exposing my vulnerability here, the mistakes that can happen when you're a young athlete. You know, I was just in my 20s, and he looks at my passport and says, "It's expired." As we're driving to the airport to go to France, and I thought, "Oh, geez, oh my God!" He says, "You can't get on the plane with this," and I had not. I didn't realize it had just expired and I hadn't renewed it, and so I couldn't get on the plane. But fortunately, I was able to go to the passport place and get an emergency passport quickly, and then rearrange the flight to get there just in time. But those are kind of things. That was something under my control that I could have organized ahead of time. So those are things that you can remind your athlete to do, to check the date on their passport, because now passports do take a long time to renew, sometimes a couple weeks and then 5 or 6 weeks. So those kind of things, the organization is really key. And those are things that, you know, to reduce the be able to reduce, help your athlete reduce stress of traveling, to, you know, plan these things ahead of time. So, in our, kind of globalized world, the travel with athletes is more prevalent than ever, and every day athletes are traveling all across states and provinces and countries and continents, it can have a profound impact on their health and performance. And so, there are ways to minimize those negative effects of travel. So some of the things that to be aware of are, the long-distance air travel can be especially rough on athletes because of things like dehydration. You know, athletes, you're in this plane with drier air, so it's and people aren't drinking enough water, because when you're on a plane, of course, you don't want to have to be going to the bathroom all the time. It's tricky. So there's that, and there's the over-exhaustion. On planes, there's a humidity level that's usually 10% lower than the body's requirements. So it can really dry you out when you're on a plane. So it's good to drink beforehand, water. Avoid drinking, of course, caffeine and alcohol, which can be dehydrating, and the majority of health issues can arise from jet lag, which is the result of our body's circadian rhythms are not being aligned with the local time. So when you're traveling across multiple time zones, it can result in symptoms that include things like fatigue. You can get gastrointestinal problems like constipation, mood changes. You know, you can feel sluggish. So you need to allow enough time. Ideally, you know, get there in advance. Allow 1 day for as adjustment for each time zone that you cross. Sometimes that isn't possible when you're going across the world, but to get there as early as you can. So, because an athlete might be really susceptible to stress, that travel preparation. Some athletes might be really organized, or their coach or their parents do, help with all those details. But, we know today with a lot of the high school kids and younger kids in college, they have what we call helicopter parents that hover over them and do everything for them. But, it might be helpful in some cases, but it's, then it leaves the athlete without being able to make good travel decisions for themselves when they're on their own. So, you've got, you need to help them with, if you can, with travel preparation, with change in their routine and kind of being in an unknown place, a foreign destination. And the combination of that travel-related stress can take a toll on the athlete's health. So as an example, I've got an athlete right now I'm working with who's traveled to Australia for a competition in, of all things, lawn bowling. I'd never worked with lawn bowling before. I thought, lawn bowling? The last athlete I worked with was doing speed skydiving, which is the fastest the sports in the world, and now we've got lawn bowling, which is at the other end of the opposite extreme. But he's very good at it, and I had to learn about lawn bowling because I didn't know. I thought that was a sport that older people did, and it wasn't that competitive. But it actually is the first prize is $100,000 at this World Championships in Australia that my athlete's flying to. So he is concerned about, an adult, I think he's about 30, 35, so he's traveled a lot before and works for one of the high-tech companies, but he still, even if you've traveled a lot, the jet lag can really get to him, and that's true with, it's just one of those physical things that happens. So, because he's only going to get there a day and a half or 2 days before the competition, so he's concerned about the jet lag part, and it's 14 hours difference. So when you're arriving there, it's kind of like their daytime is feels like your nighttime. One thing that I encourage athletes to do, if possible, is to start adjusting your sleep times before you leave. So going to bed, if you're traveling east, going to bed a half hour earlier or an hour early each night so that you get your body ready to be in the new time zone. And then being able to, when you're there, you want to set your clock ahead of your watch ahead of time as soon as you get on the plane, so you adjust to the new time. But sleep, then once you arrive, it's tough to sleep. Oftentimes you wake up, so I was advising him with some different things you could do. Like, for instance, I traveled to London to work with my a track athlete there for the 2012 Olympics, and it's 8 hours difference. And so when I arrived, this is so 7 years ago, but when I arrived there, I was staying with at a friend's house, went to sleep or tried to sleep, and of course wake up at, you know, 2 in the morning. My body thinks it's day time to wake up. And so what I did was just did some exercises, a few floor exercises, something simple you can do in the room right there where I don't have to go outside because it's nighttime, of course. But I did some sit-ups, push-ups, leg raises, that kind of thing for about 20, 30 minutes, just enough to kind of tire me out more while I was drinking lots of water to keep hydrated. And that helped me to go back to sleep and then be able to sleep through the night. So because the next morning I woke up and I was, that was one of the most important days where I was going to have to get on a train and go meet my athlete. And we were both going to do an interview together with NBC. They were interviewing us about our work together as sports psychologist and athlete. So it was really a wonderful opportunity and important, and those are the kinds of things that you can do. And it required, you know, all of a sudden I have to be mentally on when I've had this on jet lag and disrupted sleep. So sometimes, you know, you just arrive at a place and all of a sudden the athlete is required to really perform well. Or if you're doing an interview somewhere, you have to have your be mentally focused, and it's a time to really bond with your athlete too and kind of help them with their mental preparation. So I was able to get, I was not at 100% because I was, what I should have done is flown a few days earlier, but schedule didn't allow that. So you do the best that you can under those circumstances. So I was able to, at least one tip is to, yeah, do some exercises. If you wake up in the middle of the night, do some floor exercises to get yourself to go back to sleep. And there's also certain sleep aids. You know, I think you want to have an athlete avoid taking sleeping pills, prescription sleeping pills. Often those really have bad side effects, and or they might put them to sleep, but then they're really groggy during the day, and they're not getting that proper sleep. So those sleeping pills, medications are not effective, but certain things that can be effective are lavender that I suggest. I use that myself. Lavender is an essential oil, so you can get it at most health food stores here, like Whole Foods, it's just an oil. I think putting some on your ears, you know, like acupuncture therapists and acupressure, they always work on the ears and the feet because that helps to be absorbed into the body. And so if you put a few drops of lavender on the ears and on the bottoms of the feet, I do that if I'm having trouble sleeping, and advise my athletes to do that, and it really helps to with quality of sleep. So, and there's no side effects, and it's easy to get. You can buy a really tiny little bottle. So I know on planes they restrict the amount of fluids you can take, but you can take a little bit of lavender oil. It's only less an ounce or something. So it's a tiny amount that you put in a plastic bag, and you can take that, you know, on the plane. Just putting them in clear plastic bags so it gets through security, okay? So that's a simple thing. Lavender to help with sleep, and also valerian root is an herb. You can get that. It comes in pill form, and you can, it's a supplement, and you can get it in any health food store. So I use that myself to be able to sleep. And I recommended that to my lawn bowls athlete. And so that's something simple that you can carry, use. Have them try it, those things ahead of time, of course, to make sure that the body can it's okay for with their body, and I've never found any issues with any of the athletes using those, so that they're very gentle and really helps with sleep, so they can recover. Also, I recommend, you know, athletes getting extra sleep 2 or 3 days before the competition, or if they are traveling, you know, get extra, you know, if they're used to getting 7 hours sleep, try to get 8 hours or 9 hours of sleep the 2 or 3 days before a competition, so that when they do get on a plane and travel somewhere, or if it's the night before a competition, there's often, you know, you're excited and you don't get as much sleep as possible, or you might have a noisy hotel. You don't have extra sleep in the bank, so you can perform well. So those are some kinds of things that you can work with your athletes there. If there's a way, you know, with the athlete, for instance, that's flying to Australia, he's getting there, and then he has 1 day to adjust. He's flying from here, from the Bay Area, 14 hours different, so it's not a lot of time to adjust. But he has, the first thing he does is a pro-am game with professionals and amateurs with the top 32 pros in the world, and it's kind of a fundraiser. So they do that, kind of a low-stakes competition before the big competition the next day. So that's a great way, if there's any way that your athlete can get there and have time to adjust and a time to you know, do a fun game, or to, you know, play practice their sport in a way that's non competitive first, or you know, simulate a game without all the pressure. That can really help you to make a transition from the traveling, to kind of get back in the mindset of playing before they have to play the big game or the big competition. So, yeah. And some of the things that, you know, some other examples of traveling with athletes, I've done that with an athlete for the 2004 Olympics in Athens, Greece. I traveled there with a pole vaulting athlete. And so I just wanted to mention some of the ways that you can work with athletes if you travel with them. What I did, many times if it's the Olympics or some really important event, you might be just a small part of their workouts, so you might not have that much exposure to them, because they're very busy with, especially if it's a big name athlete, they're busy with their coach and then with interviews, and their sponsor wants them to be at certain events, and they're very busy practicing, so you might just be asked to do a small part. And so she asked me to come to one of her workouts there, training beforehand. So I did that. I came in and went through to the Olympic training center there in Athens, Greece, that they established at the university, and a lot of security to get through. So you need to be prepared for being able to have the correct ID and to get into Olympic training center. You have to have a special credential beforehand. The athlete has to apply for that through the Olympics. So with the Olympics, there's a lot of credentialing that has to go on, so that you have the right papers and cards to get in to the get through all the security. And then I worked with her there, and the way I worked with her is you want to be very flexible and work with the athlete the way that they, to meet their needs and not to interfere with their regular practices. So, or what it is they're already planning with their coach. So she was there working with her coach, I sat on the sidelines there just observing her, you know, practicing with the pole vaulting and going down the runway and practicing. And So I was just observing, taking notes, and I could hear a little bit what the coach's cues, what he was telling her to do and her feedback and that kind of thing. And then afterward, after the practice session, you know, we met and did a session and did some debriefing, and so and then did a visualization to help her to internalize the cues that her coach was giving her there. So so that was really key. It's a great way that you could work with athletes if you're traveling with them to a competition, is to, if they invite you to, if you're allowed to go to one of their practice sessions, you can observe what goes on with the coach. And afterward, you know, if they have, sometimes they'll have, you know, didn't go so well, or the coach was, they're having issues with the coach changing up things, or, you know, they just need to vent to you and kind of get out their stress and be able to just talk about what they're frustrated with or they're stressing. You can be their kind of confidant, and knowing that you keep everything confidential, they just need somebody to kind of to talk to about all the stress that's going on. So that can really, you can be really valuable in that case to just, you know, afterward, well, oftentimes athletes don't have anybody to talk to that really is objective and is someone that understands from an athlete point of view, and you can be their confidant, their mental training coach, as well as their friend, and or just a professional friend that they can feel like they can really reflect on what just happened in the workout, and then you can give really supportive feedback, or maybe sometimes they have trouble communicating with their coach, so you can give communication tips on how to, maybe you could say it this way, or say that kind of thing can be really valuable to a coach. So one time she was really having difficulty with her Achilles, so she was actually doing her physical therapy there. They put have an ice, a garbage can filled with ice and water, if you can imagine, and she would step into that. That's how they ice themselves. And so while she's in this garbage can with filled with ice and water, ice water, that's where we would sometimes do, it's not the great best place to talk, but we do some of our talking there. So that kind of thing can be so valuable if you can just be there for an athlete after a practice like that. So that wanted to give you an example of that, of how you could be there traveling, be a support to an athlete. And then I just want to answer one question that came in with Paul in from the UK. One of our recently certified performing edge coaches. I'm not sure if he's on the call here, but Paul asks, how do you charge your fees, or do you, if an athlete asks you to travel with them to a competition? So, yeah, my answer with that is the good news is that there's no standard for that, and it's whatever you work out with the athletes, and in this case, it depends on, you know, the level of the athletes and their what they're asking for and what your means is, what the ability they have to pay you. Oftentimes, I think it's if it's an Olympics. You know, I didn't charge anything for working with my athlete for it during the Olympics. I haven't in any of the Olympics because I feel like it's a just a great chance to support another athlete through the Olympics. And a lot of times, athletes in the Olympics don't have a lot of funds to be able to pay you. They're paying maybe their coach. Is all their athletic coach is all that they can afford, and it's just a great opportunity for if you can do that to be there with them, and possibly if you get if you ask for a testimonial afterwards, that can be really valuable to you. You can't demand that or say I will coach you if you give me a testimonial, you know, that's not ethical to do that kind of contract. It's better to just do the coaching and then afterward, most of the time if you ask for a testimonial or a comment from them, they're happy to offer that if they can. In a few cases, if they are not allowed to because of a team or because of university regulations or something, then, you know, they might have to delay that till later. But most of the time, yeah, you can get a really nice comment, and that can help you to be able to reach out to more athletes. So that I would say a lot of times if you're traveling with an athlete, you couldn't possibly charge for all the hours that you work with them. So with Olympics, I would say, I have not charged for my time there. I've arranged for my own travel, usually staying with a friend there. Sometimes the athlete might be able to help you with getting, you can't, if you're in the working with the athlete in the Olympics, the athlete stays in the Olympic Village, which is, where all their accommodations are taken care of. But anyone else is pretty much on their own because the athlete I was working with, her husband could not stay in the village. He had to pay for his own accommodations outside in the town there, and coach the same thing. So with the Olympics, you're kind of on your own. It's best to find a friend or someone that you can stay with there. Sometimes, but then there's other situations where if it's a not the Olympics, but a professional athlete, like a pro golfer, they could be in a different situation where they they're making a good income from their sport. So you can work out different arrangements where they can pay you, and it's really up to you what you can charge them. It can be, arrange talking with them once a day for an hour, doing a session, and then charging your normal hourly rate for that 1 hour. You could ask them, if it's a professional athlete that has funds, you could ask them to pay for your travel. In a few cases, if it's a really top athlete, you could ask them to, for a sort of a project fee, a certain fee, whatever that is, for just like you were working with, say, someone to do your website, you could ask them to, you charge them or pay them by the hour, but that can get, it's difficult to estimate the number of hours, you could pay a project fee for doing the whole project, doing the whole website. So you could charge just a certain amount, $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, whatever it is that you can, depending on the athlete's ability to pay and what sport they're in. In golf and tennis, athletes can make a lot of income. In other sports like rowing or less well-known sports, they don't make anything. So they're funding it all themselves. So if you've got young athletes, sometimes their parents might have ability to pay well, so they may be able to pay for your travel there and pay a certain project fee for just the whole thing, so you don't have to worry about number of hours. Oftentimes you might not be working with them they're working with a physical athletic coach. They're somebody separately, and you're just doing a small part kind of thing. But it's with traveling to another place, a lot of times it's the experience that's important for you. So that's what I would say about the charging part so far. And if I may come across more information about that, that I can send sent to you all too. So yeah, that's some information with that. I also wanted to go over some other things, other topics here, like a checklist for athletes before you go, things like group travel, and things like what to take with you, and there's areas of traveling with equipment. We'll talk about some of these on our next call too, about more specifics about jet lag, about hot climates, dealing with the heat and protecting yourself with intense sun, hydration and dehydration, altitude, coping with altitude when you're in running at altitude. Matt, you do that with ultra marathoners, cold climates, illnesses. There's many issues to work with traveling. But first, I just want to open it up to all of you and see if you have what questions or what stories do you have that about traveling that could that you'd like to share. Anyone can jump in. Just press *6 if you muted yourself. Hey, are you guys there? Just let me know that you can hear me okay.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Joanne. I just was going to comment on, as far as traveling goes, I have a lot of athletes that are on a little bit more of a budget because they don't get the same paydays, especially in triathlon or in road races, things like that is a little bit more difficult. And, of course, they have a lot of times they're taking their bike and they're traveling on the road. And that's in itself difficult. They're driving maybe 12 hours to get somewhere, and then they have to spend a little bit more time just adjusting, getting their mobility going after a long car drive. And so just something I was thinking about, we talked a lot about flights, but I advise my athletes on the road that they're going to drive for about 2 hours, and then they need to get out and start to do some mobility, do some light walking, that sort of thing, and make sure that they're doing that every couple hours, even if it's just for about 10 minutes. So when they do get to their destination, they haven't been so sort of stuck in their seated position, that sort of thing. So, hopefully that helps out a little bit too, but there's also what I use is called a BackJoy, and it helps you, even if you're are flying. I have my basketball player that I told you about, Gabby Williams. She flies a lot in flying or in driving long periods of time. She's taller too, and she has some SI issues when she's sitting for long periods of time because now her hips are getting stuck in that posterior rotated position. So little thing called a BackJoy, they can order online or get it even at like CVS, and it allows you to keep your hips neutral when you sit under it. So it's just, it's a game changer for some of my athletes and keeping them out of lower back pain or SI pain, which I know that's a big factor with when we talk about performance, being able to stabilize through the SI. That is where a lot of athletes are losing power. And sometimes after long trips, flying or driving, that BackJoy and taking breaks to mobilize along the way can make a big difference. They actually can feel like they're getting the mass specific force that they need through their deep longitudinal chain in the back of their bodies when they are pushing the ground away. And a lot of my athletes for a while were just complaining that they didn't feel their feet under them very well, kind of like I was talking about before. They felt like they were kind of stuck, or they actually had pain in their back that they couldn't feel the same power. And so that little that little trick, along with just doing mobility when they could, seemed to have a big benefit as well. So it helped some of my athletes, including myself. I have that L4, L5, S1 fracture in my spine from hot shotting. So if that is of use to anybody, but you can take that with you onto a plane. You can obviously take it with you on road trips, et cetera.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Matt. Yeah, so back joy is a tool you can take. And yeah, and the breaks, I think, is really important because of mobility and also something that a lot of people don't know with sitting for a long time, athletes are more prone to blood clots. And, you know, Serena Williams actually got a blood clot. You think, wow, this is one of the best athletes in the world in tennis. And a few years ago, she got a blood clot. You know, because what happens is athletes are more prone to that because we're, you know, doing this high volume workouts. The blood is flowing really quickly through the body. And then after a competition or after training, what do? We sit right away, you know, either sitting in a car for a long time or sitting on a plane for long periods of time. And so you get this dramatic difference. All of a sudden the blood is just pooling in your legs and not going anywhere. And so that's why it's really important to get to be able to move, keep that mobility, as you say, Matt, going. And we think, oh, if I'm on a plane or if I'm just sitting in the car, I can't really move. But actually, you know, I've found ways that you can do small movements, even, you know, while if you're a passenger in the car, you could sit there, you could be doing bicycle movements with your legs, you know, stretching back and forth. You're just mild little movements, but, you know, it's sort of by, you know, moving your legs up and down. You could be doing your ankles, doing foot circles to keep your ankles immobilized, go outside and then go circles toward the inside and then stretches. You could, and then with the back, you could be doing I call it cat and camel. So that's something you can still do in a car seat or a airplane seat, where a cat is sort of curving your back like a cat would stretch. So you make this big curve in your back and you stretch your arms back. Everybody can try that right now, actually, while you're sitting or standing. Kind of, you could do it like if you're in a hotel room, you could do it on all fours on the ground like a cat would be on all fours. But you don't have to be. You can do it sitting or standing, where you're really arching your back as much as possible, holding that for 5 seconds or so. And then you do the camel, which is the opposite, you know, make a big hump in your back and hold that for a few seconds and so round your back, and then go back and forth and do that, the cat for 5 seconds arching, and then leaning forward. And you can just notice right away how it really mobilizes the back there, and that SI joint. And a lot of athletes have problems with the piriformis muscle in the glutes. Those are also important for running, swimming, but for so many sports where we move, tennis, volleyball, and so you're doing all of those things. So moving when you're in a seat is really important. Even if I'm driving, you know, of course you're a little limited there, but you could still be doing that cat and camel, and I can still have my hands on the wheel and still looking forward, and it just wakes me up, kind of thing. You could also put your arms in the air, sort of one at a time, reaching way up, and then, you know, your left arm way up and your right arm stretched down as far as you can, and then your right arm up, left arm down. So those kind of things you can do to keep mobile while you're in a car. If you're going to in a plane, you know, each time if I have to go to the rest, you could do things in your chair, but also if you have to go to the back of the plane for the restroom, there's not that much room there, but you could still do those small exercises, you know, in the the restroom right there. One of the things I do is I call it, just actually using the, you can't stay there very long, but that you could do for 10, 15 seconds, just put your hands on the back of the toilet seat and then do, dips with your arms. Now, just do a few of those, dipping, moving your body up and down using the, there in the restroom. And so, you're just, you can use whatever you have, whatever furniture you have to be able to help you to move a little bit. And it can make a huge difference, I think, in getting that blood flowing. So, yeah, thanks, Matt, for that example. And what about Evan, are you still there? Or Michelle? And do you have other questions or comments or other things that, something you've experienced?
This is Evan. I don't have any more questions. Thank you. I'll have to jump out of the call to go to a workshop. Thank you very much. It was great.
Thanks for coming. Yeah, I'm sure you've got great stories about traveling to France and swimmers, too. Maybe you can share next time. Yeah, we'll do on our next call too. Or if you have anything nuggets that you want to share with us or takeaways.
I like you sharing your experience in the Olympics and going to such competition like a meet without necessarily charging. I totally agree, just for the experience and the testimonials, and then just being there is awesome. So I got that. And also I like the, Matt's suggestion about fit and compete as a way, like a routine or something to really try to, refocus and just get rid of these negative, thoughts about the outcome and staying grounded. So that's what I'm taking away.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Another one I like is anything that rhymes is good. Keep going, energy flowing is another one that you could use to stay in the process. Keep going, energy flowing. Keep that, just thinking about the, a sense of flow. Thank you, Evan. And, Michelle, any comments or takeaways that you have for today? Comments or questions?
Yeah, I like the reminder of time zones and allowing one day to recover from each time zone. And also just the idea of when they are traveling, just to keep moving and stretching and, just because it's in preparation for what's coming ahead. I think that's also a very good reminder. I really appreciate you answering my question. I thought that was a really interesting perspective about having empathy for the other team and getting into their head and know that they're hungry to get to the next point. And I that hadn't occurred to me to even visualize or do an activity around that, and just even imagining them chasing, and then the whole metaphor with the gas pedal, just pumping the gas pedal. That was really helpful. Thank you.
Oh, good. Thanks. Yeah, that was helpful. And it's good to imagine getting in the head of the other team for a moment. And if that's helpful for athletes, to think about them being hungry. And so, it can be a good motivator there. So, gas pedal and time zones. Athletes, we're just, that's in our blood, in our DNA to keep moving, keep stretching. If I'm driving somewhere and, speaking of gas, if you have a gas car, my Subaru, you're getting gas for your car. Most people are just standing around. Well, that's a great time to stretch. That's when I'm leaning forward and putting my arms over my head, or stretching, twisting backwards, and marching in place. You can do anything just to keep moving. You're waiting there for your car to get gassed up, energizing your car. So you might as well energize your body, right? And do some quick exercises. So there's always ways to be able to to move. And when you're moving your body, you're also moving your mind. And you could also have your athletes, of course, when they're traveling, be, you know, playing your MP3s, your audios you created for them, and visualizing the race. Keep moving physically and keep your mind moving mentally. So, great. Thank you, Michelle. And Matt, are you still there? Did you have a takeaway or something that was helpful for you today?
Well, of course, I always love listening to everyone talk. I'm taking notes as we go along, and I always appreciate that. So I want to say thank you for all the good notes. It's three minds in this case, or four, I guess, if you count mine, is better than one. So that's always so helpful. And it just reminds me of, well, a couple things. Compression socks, I was going to say, the other factor, and not just when traveling, but with a lot of my executives that work long hours where they have to sit, but then they're also competing in triathlons, et cetera, over the weekends. And so compression socks, we use those more for sitting periods than we in competition itself. I don't really notice that it's that big of a difference, but I think they're great to have on, you know, while you're traveling. And then my other comment would just be outcome over income. And so just on the business side of things, what you guys have been talking about, I have some athletes that are, they're on a budget, like I mentioned before. And it just reminds me of the kid that I worked with that, honestly, he was just working as a valet, and he was a triathlete, and he would pay me with all dollar bills, fives and ones for his training, but I did make it affordable for him. It wasn't my normal rates, but I believed in him. I thought every athlete should pay something, but I would travel to meets with him. As he rose up in the ranks, I was getting more experience as a coach, and that was valuable to me. Really, by the time I got done with my travel expenses, whatever he was paying me for training, I was still, it cost me more to coach the kid than if I hadn't coached him at all, but the experience was invaluable. And then one day I got a call from Bobby McGee, the, you know, U.S. Triathlon coach, and the rest is kind of history. I'm actually driving to Colorado in a couple of days to work with Bobby for a week out there again, and that is so valuable. And I just would finish it with, I have some executive clients that hired me because of the success that this kid had, and some other athletes like him, and you know, I get top dollar from them. So I feel like it all sort of pays out in the end. And but in the outcome versus income kind of thought process, I think that's when, ironically, you do end up doing better financially, when you're not so concerned about how much you're getting for a specific athlete, but more, you know, what is the outcome of this? What am I going to get out of by doing this with this athlete? And is that worth that process? And I think if we think like that, then eventually the payday comes as well, right? So that's my thought on that.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Yeah, there's some people, business clients can pay, you have a better ability to pay kind of thing, and some athletes might not. So you think about, yeah, what's the experience here? What can I contribute? And you're probably helping to build a much better person with those athletes too, and helping them to yeah, and they may not have the ability to pay as much, so it's okay to, you know, we've all been athletes ourselves, so in a way it's kind of giving back to the sport, giving back to people. So that's good to think of it that way. And there's always, if athletes can't pay you a certain amount either, there's always other ways to get things like the experience, perhaps a testimonial, or perhaps just the chance to work with them and see them grow is so rewarding. Yeah, so that's really a good thing. And yeah, with the thank you for reminding me that the compression socks kind of thing. Yeah, I was going to mention that is with travelers have a 2 to 4 times increased risk for blood clots. As I mentioned, also they're called deep vein thrombosis or pulmonary embolisms. So athletes are right up there. So to prevent those blood clots from forming and also prevent fatigue, athletes want to wear those compression socks. They're really great, and they promote blood flow. And then also, as you mentioned, Matt, getting up and walking at least every 2 hours. I think even more often is better, 1 hour. But if you can't get up, just moving in your seat is really important too. And then you can do light exercises like ankle pumps, going up on your ankles. That's really simple if you're standing. You can do marching in place if you're standing. Let's say you're in a plane walking down the aisle, you could do marching in the kind of just while you're standing, waiting for the restroom in the back of the car, the back of the plane. You can do knee kicks, or butt kicks, so you're bringing your ankles up to your back. You can do glute squeezes. All those kinds of little things can really keep you moving. So those are great. Well, thank you for those. And just one other note is that. When you're in a plane, intestinal gases expand with increases in altitude, so it can lead to bloating and pain in the stomach. So it makes the problem worse if you're drinking soda or carbonated drinks, even carbonated water. It creates fizz, so it's good to have your athletes not to avoid the carbonated drinks so that they don't get stomach issues, and to bring earplugs so that they can, then you can actually get really good, some good rest on a plane if you bring earplugs to block out the noise, and also, eye protectors, just something for over your eyes. You can get those little masks to bring along to block out the light, and then all of a sudden you've got, you can create a nice sleeping situation and get a lot of good rest on a plane. So those are really, can play a pivotal role in performance. And hydrating, of course, too, always having a water bottle with you. So so those are great ideas. So thank you all it's always so great, such an honor to talk with all of you. And it's such a great conversation. Michelle and Matt and Evan and other people in the background, Paul, thank you for everyone for joining us. And it will do next call, it's second for Thursday, so October the 10th, and then October the 24th. October 10th will be our next call, so you can put that on your calendar. And, I'm always happy to support you all here. So great. Yeah, great conversation with you. And I would just want to wish you all a good week. And, I'll send the recording for this shortly and other tips that I come across too. So thanks all, and happy traveling if you're traveling anywhere. And we'll talk to you next time on October the 10th. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Joanne. Bye, Matt. Have a good day, guys.
Bye, Michelle. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.